This is the Big Stories Podcast, where we tell the amazing and inspiring stories from across the Big 12 Conference.
Welcome back to Big Stories. I'm your host, Cleon Wall. What are we waiting for? Let's get to the storylines.
The Big Stories, five biggest storylines.
Number five.
Hoops, there it is. The Big 12 has the number one team in the nation. And what an upset by the Iowa State Cyclones. Big time teams are stepping up as we inch closer and closer to conference play. And we'll be spending a lot more time on the Hoopsters in the weeks to come. Producer Chase Davidson takes us through the biggest storylines in Big 12 basketball.
In case you missed it, the Big 12 teams are manifesting the fact that this is the best basketball conference in the country. After playing in some high-caliber holiday tournaments, let's review how the basketball season has panned out thus far for the Big 12. Iowa State demolished number one ranked Purdue on Saturday by 23 points, jumping up in the polls to number four. Arizona was also dominant in a win over number 20 ranked Auburn, but most notably, they are the new number one team in the country. As a result of that, the Big 12 now has four teams in the top 10, Houston ranked 7 and BYU ranked 10, with two more teams in the top 25, Texas Tech at 16 and Kansas at 19. But what makes the Big 12 really so great is the depth. Here are some signature wins and developing storylines from the unranked Big 12 teams. TCU, despite a rocky start losing some signature pieces due to injury, has rattled off a couple big wins, beating number 10 Florida and winning the Rady Children's Invitational versus Wisconsin. Oklahoma State has begun the season 9-0. After being a basement dweller of the Big 12 last year, they are seeking to prove otherwise this year. The Cowboys beat GCU 84-78 on Saturday night in the Jerry Colangelo Classic, continuing their longest win streak since 2006. UCF and Colorado both started 8-1. UCF beating Texas A&M and Colorado notching a solid win over San Francisco. Arizona State nearly won the Maui Invitational over Thanksgiving break, falling short in the championship to USC. But they have pulled off some big wins already over Texas and Oklahoma in the last 2 weeks. Watch out for the Sun Devils. The Big 12 this year looks not only powerful at the top, but also full of depth, with many teams who are ready to shock the nation when conference play rolls around. As of right now, the Big 12 is poised to have more than half of its 16 teams make the NCAA tournament.
Number four.
That's a wrap. We are contacting a bunch of great podcasters across the Big 12 who've helped us throughout the football season. We want them to help us wrap up the season for the teams that they cover. While some teams are preparing for a postseason football run, others are looking forward to next season. So we thought we'd start with the teams that are looking forward to next season. First up, Oklahoma State. The Poor Pokes only won one game this year, and it wasn't even against an FBS opponent. I didn't want to focus too heavily on the past, so I got Locked On Oklahoma State podcast host Cody Stovall to chat with me about the future. Cody, I'm not sure which positives you can take from this past season, but Oklahoma State does have a new coach. Unfortunately for you, or maybe it's fortunate, he's not in the college football playoff. But what makes Eric Morris the right guy right now for the Cowboys?
Well, I think the offensive innovation that's always been in Stillwater is predicated upon the skill positions, right? Getting the O lineman and D lineman to Stillwater has always been a little bit of a difficult process, but getting the star-studded athletes in Stillwater has always been extremely simplistic. And I think Eric Morris accentuates that. He's an offensive mind, number one offense in the country, number two passing offense in the country. They've got an 1,100-yard rusher. So unlike some of the old Dana Holgorsen stuff that was all about the air raid, this is an air raid that has a lot of running game configured into it, and you have to have that in Stillwater. Geographically, his recruiting footprint is in the state of Texas, in the state of Oklahoma. He'll tiptoe into Missouri and Arkansas as well. So I think that fits exactly for what Oklahoma State is looking for. We're not a national recruiting brand, right? And that's what we tried to do this previous season. We went and got guys from California and Florida and Mississippi, and it just did not work out, right? Eric Morris brings us back to the offensive creativity that made Oklahoma State famous under Mike Gundy. And again, the recruiting footprint is precisely what we need. That is why we're insanely excited.
So Morris was hired, but then he still coached North Texas in the AAC championship game. Right. He still needs to recruit guys, at least for the next recruiting period. But guys did sign with the Cowboys, knowing he was going to be there. We had guys during the early signing period signing with the Cowboys. You know a little bit about recruiting. How did the Pokes do, and who was the big get during that early signing period?
I think we did a phenomenal job, especially when you take into consideration the day before the national signing class, We had three guys committed, right? So we went from three dudes, the 190th class in the country, to 15 dudes up to number 74 in America in a matter of 4 days. So I think that is absolutely remarkable for him and his staff to have a four-day turnaround and bring together a top 75 class. The highlight of the class has to be Oklahoma running back KD Batman Jones. He was committed to Oklahoma State for quite some time. He decommitted after they let Mike Gundy go to KU, and he decided to come back. And from all indications we're getting, he took a very healthy pay cut to come to Oklahoma State over schools like Kansas and Tennessee. And I think that alone accentuates how exciting it's going to be in Stillwater for the offensive innovation. Again, this is a guy who owns the Jinx Oklahoma all-time rushing record. And I think he's somebody that can instantaneously provide a lot of excitement in the backfield alongside a returning back like Rodney Fields if he were to come. And then you have the 1,100-yard rusher from North Texas, Caleb Hawkins, coming over. There's so much offensive ability that North Texas has. And when you combine that with some of the Oklahoma State strengths, I mean, you mentioned how downtrodden of a season it was, but the two position groups that clearly excelled by the end of the year were the front seven defensively and the offensive line. If you watch that North Texas versus Tulane game, that is their biggest deficiency. The offensive line and the defensive line was the two things that Tulane definitely outmatched them at. So if you bring that roster of playmakers to Stillwater and you can get some of our O-linemen and D-linemen to stick around, that has the makings for a team that can at least be 500 competitive.
Okay, I do want to ask you one last question. I said there were not many positives, or I wasn't sure what positives you could take away from this past season.
Yeah.
I want you to think really hard here, Cody. You talked about the offensive defensive lines. That's something positive, at least from the end of the season. If there was one thing that you're going to remember about this season, other than the fact that you only won one game and that game was not against an FBS opponent, what's right. The one thing you are going to remember, or even you could say, what's the one positive that you're going to think, you know what, this is going to lead to great things down the line?
Well, I think in the NIL era, you're looking for plug-and-play individuals, right? You're trying to pay people to come and instantaneously make an impact. Oklahoma State failed miserably in that department. So any school that's looking at how negatively NIL can go, look no further than Stillwater. Therefore, the highlight to me in this season is the beginning of the year, we had all these guys making $20,000, $25,000, $23,000 a month that were providing essentially nothing. By the end of the year, we went from allowing 5.7 yards per carry to 2.6 yards per carry with all primarily backups. That is what sticks in my mind this season. You have a guy like Parker Robertson, who's a former walk-on. He's probably one of those dudes that's only making $6,000, $7,000 a month. Yet he led the team in tackles. He led the team in a lot of statistical categories. But more importantly, he led the team off the field. You have to have some of that old-school cowboy culture, the grab your lunch pail, go to work, go to war, blue-collar mentality. The guys that stepped up at the end of the season to make Oklahoma State competitive were the backups that were not getting all the NIL dollars. All of the UCLA, LSU, Florida dudes that we paid, they ended up basically not playing whatsoever. So I think you can look at Oklahoma State and Florida State as how NIL can go negatively. It's not about the amount of money that you have to spend. It's about spending it on the right guys. Look at Texas Tech. People talked about, oh, they bought their way into the CFP. No, they bought the pieces they needed for the CFP. You look at Jacob Rodriguez. He's been there for like 5 years. Baron Morton, been there for like 4 or 5 years. So they had those old school cowboy culture or Texas Tech culture guys, and they used the portal to plug and play. We tried that, and we failed miserably, a.k.a. our talent evaluations in the portal was a disaster. If you look at Eric Morse's track record, whether it be Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes, John Mateer, Cam Ward, Drew Mestemaker, we now have a coach that can identify talent to a level that not very many in the country have been able to.
Well, I would say that the highlight from this past season was talking to you for me. So, Cody, thanks a lot for joining us here on the Big Stories Podcast.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure. I greatly appreciate everything that you've given me time to just kind of air, because we talk about football, film, all that, but we don't talk about the stuff off of the air when it comes to, you know, just different battles that people go through. And I greatly appreciate you and you giving my son a little bit of a platform too.
A lot more wrap-ups from the Big 12 in the coming weeks.
Number three.
What a bummer. Kansas State and Iowa State are skipping out on bowl games. Now, the reasons, they both cite a lack of interest from some of the top leaders on the team, meaning the players is what I'm trying to say. Also player availability, especially with Iowa State since they've had a lot of injuries this season. And also they talk about their new coaching hires. Colin Klein is going to K-State. Jimmy Rogers is going to be the new head coach at Iowa State. Listen, I get it. I get that maybe there's a lack of interest just because this season just seemed to last forever. And especially with Iowa State, you're just like, man, we don't want to injure anyone more, any other people. And we don't think that our second or third stringers or fourth stringers are really worthy of playing in the game. I could also talk, you know, we could go on about the coaches too. You know, it'd be interim coaches coaching these guys. I get it. But that doesn't mean I have to be happy about it. Bowls are supposed to be a reward and a time to prepare for the following season. You know, it's supposed to be a reward for the season you had, even the lumps along the road. It's supposed to reward the hard work of the players. They get nice swag when they go to these bowl games. I don't know. What about the other players, though? You know, what if they want a chance to prove themselves one last time to either stay on this team or maybe go to a new team? What about the experiences of a lifetime for the players? I help out with a podcast with Connor Pay and Chase Roberts. Connor, who played for BYU football. Chase, who plays for BYU football, at least through the bowl game, and then he'll be done. Anyway, we had a great conversation one day just about the goods and bads of bowl games, some of their fond memories, some of the times that they weren't so fond of. And they'll never forget those things. I just think that some of these guys are missing out on going to bowl games and experiencing these things one last time with their fellow teammates. You know, would Kansas State and Iowa State have done this if they could have played one more home game? Maybe. I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe if they would have played each other one more time? One more Farmageddon, you know, this year? I mean, I would have liked that, but neither of them probably would have liked it. I don't know. It just feels like K-State and Iowa State took the fun out of everything by saying, we're skipping out on the bowl season. By the way, is this one more fallout from the Farmageddon played in Ireland in week zero? Probably not, but I look back on that week zero game with fondness, and I'm disappointed that it ended this way for both teams after so much hope and hype for game one. Oh, and let's not talk about how Notre Dame is backing out of their potential Pop-Tarts bowl game against BYU. Lots of storylines there for a team that was sad that they didn't make the college football playoff. Of course, so was BYU.
Number two.
It's time to celebrate. Seven other teams will go bowling this holiday season, and there are some intriguing matchups. So let's rank the most interesting games. Number seven, Navy and Cincinnati in the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. To be honest with you, this has everything to do with how the Bearcats collapsed at the end of the season, losing their last four games. Only reason I want to tune in is to see if they can bounce back against a resilient Navy team. Number six, Arizona State and Duke in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. I would be way more interested in this game if Sam Levitt were playing for the Sun Devils, but it looks like the quarterback is on his way out the door. You have to give it to Kenny Dillingham and the staff for keeping this team together and finishing the season 8-4. Also, you know, I might just tune in because I like looking at the Sun Bowl. It's a cool stadium, like right between two rock formations. It's really, really cool. Number five, TCU and USC in the Valero Alamo Bowl. I'm excited to see Horned Frogs QB Josh Hoover and his bevy of talented wide receivers one more time against a Big Ten defense. By the way, it still feels weird to say that USC's in the Big Ten. Anyway, it'll be good to see if he can prove himself before he goes to the NFL. Number four, Utah, Nebraska in the SRS Distribution Las Vegas Bowl. I want to see if Utah can run all over the Cornhuskers like they did most of the rest of the year against the other teams that they played. Number three, Houston and LSU in the Kinders Texas Bowl. Maybe I should rate them number two, but we'll leave them at number three. Houston Cougars are one of the feel-good stories of the Big 12 season. Kind of like the BYU Cougars, they are not a perfect team, but they found ways to win. They won't face a great LSU team, but I'm assuming the Tigers will want to show how good they are to their new coach, Lane Kiffin. Of course, I'm talking about individual Tigers who'd like to remain on LSU's roster. Number two, Arizona and SMU in the Trust and Will Holiday Bowl. I like how the Wildcats bounce back from early season struggles to finish the season 9-3. I think they can get one more win over SMU to cap off a successful season for Brent Brennan, this being season number two for him. And number one, BYU and Georgia Tech in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. this is not because I'm a homer. These are actually two good teams. I want to see how BYU bounces back from their second disappointment of the season to Texas Tech. I'm also excited to see how BYU's defense tries to handle Yellow Jackets QB Haynes King. But let's be honest, the real reason I want to tune in is just I want to see the mascot, the Pop-Tarts mascot, and players eating that mascot at the end of the game.
Number one.
One Big 12 team is in the college football playoff, and I am so happy for Texas Tech. I like the Red Raiders back when Mike Leach was coaching the teams, and they were throwing the ball all over the field with all the great quarterbacks that they had back then. And back in the days of Spike Dykes, the coach before Mike Leach was to recruit the West Texas kids. Now, I lived out West Texas, and that is West Texas's team. And you find a lot of Texas Tech fans out there, and they are so proud of their team. I can't imagine what it's like now. I mean, I lived there in the late 90s, early 2000s. I can't imagine how the people in West Texas, Lubbock and also West Texas, feel about this Texas Tech team right now. You know, there are Texas fans and Texas A&M fans out in West Texas, but in reality, I think this is a West Texas team, and I'm just so happy that they are in the college football playoff. I don't care how much money they spend on this team. That's part of college football today. And I like that good things are happening to teams who've always been the little brothers to the big programs, especially teams like Texas and Texas A&M. They are a good, complete team. They have an incredible defense. They have a QB in Baron Morton who doesn't usually do stupid things, and he can sling the rock around. And they have a nice 1-2 punch at running back. I wish they had jumped up in the CFP standings, but it made no sense for them to leap over Ohio State or Georgia. Okay, I would have loved if they would have leapt over Ohio State. My big dilemma now with the college football playoff is I'm rooting for Texas Tech or Indiana to win it all. I just wish those teams were not potentially playing in the semifinals. I wish they were playing in the finals. When I talked earlier to Locked On Oklahoma State podcaster Cody Stovall about Oklahoma State, he said, I wish we could have talked more about BYU and Texas Tech. And what he said was, I was so happy to see so many fans on social media jump on the Texas Tech bandwagon and cheer for them. And I was also heartened by that too. Now, I will have to say, if Utah was going to the college football playoff, I'm not sure how many BYU fans out there would be cheering for them. But in reality, I think most BYU fans would be cheering for just about any team from the Big 12 going into the college football playoff. And I hope that there are other Big 12 fans out there that are cheering for Texas Tech to do well, because this is really a chance for the Big 12 to shine, and especially Texas Tech to shine. As for BYU not being considered for the college football playoff, I think everyone else has made their arguments about why BYU should have been in or out of the playoff field, or at least more strongly considered. I could make the same arguments, but I won't. Here's what I will say. You could say the simple fix would be to expand the playoff field. That would have put BYU in the college football playoff. And by the way, I'm in favor of it. I was in favor of it before this all happened with BYU. The FCS has already figured this thing out. Why not go to 16 teams? In reality, much more needs to be done than just expanding the field to 16 teams. I think conferences need to be realigned so that every team in each conference plays each other. That way, we will definitely know who the top teams are in the conference. There are so many other great ideas out there that, you know, that could reshape college football for the best. And if we want what's best for college football, we need to rework the whole system so that football and fandom reign and not the almighty dollar. And I think if we implement them in a smart way, the money will eventually return. But conferences and big-time teams need to stop being selfish and think of the greater good. Wouldn't that be nice? The only thing that would make me sad in my simple mind and my one proposal is that all the good relationships that I've made throughout the Big 12 would be dashed with changes in conferences. I like the Big 12 conference, but just like every other P4 conference, it's kind of overbloated. Anyway, enough about that.
The big stories, big man on campus.
Let's award a football player at least one more time, and it's the Big 12 Championship MVP, Texas Tech linebacker Ben Roberts. His two interceptions against Bear Bachmeier, they were amazing. He played great against BYU's offense, so congrats to Ben Roberts. On this Thursday's episode, we visit with Brandon Crow. He's the producer behind Big Stories on BYU TV. We talk about how this brand all came about, his favorite big stories, and some behind-the-scenes tales of how we got those stories. Miracles were involved. That's on Thursday's episode of The Pod. Download and subscribe to the Big Stories podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Cleon Wall, and Big Stories is a production of BYU Radio.